decided to close. At the state legislature, there'll be more committee meetings of lawmakers today, even though the full House and Senate are in recess until Monday. Among the issues already introduced is one supported by the Santa Fe-based think tank, Think New Mexico. It would prohibit lobbyists and contractors from making campaign contributions. They say seven other states already have such a law. Lawmakers will be hearing from the Catholic community today. Members of the Roman Catholic Church plan a procession from downtown to the Roundhouse at 1:30. They'll be lobbying on pro-life issues. The ACLU of New Mexico says it will continue to push for domestic partnership legislation, even though the Conference of Catholic Bishops opposes it. The ACLU says it worked with the conference over a six-month period to draft legislation that would meet the bishops' demands, but in the end, the church pulled out. Diane Wood of the ACLU says they've tried to renegotiate it, but so far without success.
We've already tried that, and, you know, the answer is no, that they are absolutely opposed, and we'll be working to kill domestic partnerships this year. But know that we will never stop until we achieve full equality for all New Mexicans.
As candidates for mayor accrue campaign contributions ahead of the March 2nd municipal elections, campaign finance statements filed with the county clerk's office show incumbent Mayor David Koss well ahead of his rivals. Koss has $84,000 in his coffers, followed by challenger Zenith Kepler with $38,000. City Councilor Miguel Chavez, another mayoral contender, has received just over $11,000. Those totals represent cash only. Each campaign has also received sums donated in goods and services. And weather for Santa Fe. A winter storm warning is in effect until 6 a.m. Saturday. Mixed precipitation early today will change to all snow later as a cold front passes. Periods of heavy snow at times with up to 6 inches expected in the downtown area, with 1 to 2 feet in the mountains. Highs today in the mid-30s, overnight lows in the low 20s. And a 30% chance of lingering snow showers Saturday with a high near 30. It's currently 32 degrees. This is Dan Garrity, news all day on the hour, only on KSFR 101.1 Santa Fe.
A master of the short story, Flannery O'Connor's writing inflamed the passions of many, but also shone a bright light on the dispossessed in American culture. One of her personal favorites, The Artificial Nigger, bristles with cruel and stark observations. Join St. John's College tutor Joan Silver as she explores the story's themes of pride, shame, fear, purgatory, and grace. Friday, January 22nd, 8 p.m. in the Great Hall. Free, part of the Carol J. Worrell Annual Lecture Series on Literature. A message from St. John's College.
Pianist Yeol Eum Son, silver medalist at the Van Cliburn Piano Competition, joins the Albers Trio for a recital in Santa Fe on January 26th. Join the Santa Fe Concert Association to hear these great soloists combine their powers for some incredible music making on Tuesday, January 26th in the St. Francis Auditorium. Tickets online at santafetickets.com or at the Lenzic box office, 988-1234. A message from the nonprofit Santa Fe Concert Association.
Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Linda Siegel will join us with today's legislative update, and Robert Knott will be here speaking of the arts. I'm very happy now to welcome Catherine Hochstetler. She is a professor at the Balsillie School of International Affairs at the University of Waterloo in Canada, and she is co-author of the book Greening Brazil, Environmental Activism in State and Society. And she will be speaking tomorrow on Saturday, January 23rd at 3 o'clock in a lecture titled Brazil, the Latin American Giant, and that's at Santa Fe Prep, sponsored by the Santa Fe Council on International Relations. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
So Brazil is the focus of a great deal of international environmental activism because of rainforest destruction and deforestation. How have environmental concerns played out within Brazilian politics over the last several decades, which you've been studying very thoroughly?
Well, there's always two stories with Brazilian environmental politics. And one of those stories is always that The scale of environmental degradation in Brazil is quite large. It has at various times had some of the highest deforestation rates in the world, and the urban pollution has often been really quite devastating in terms of its impact on human health and the environment more generally. But the other story of Brazilian environmental politics, which is less well known, is that Brazil also has really pretty advanced environmental protections, especially for the Latin American region and for the large developing countries that it's often compared to. So compared to countries like China and India and even Mexico and South Africa, some of these other kinds of countries, Brazil really has made quite a bit of progress over the years in dealing with its environmental problems. So just to give one example, it had very serious urban industrial pollution problems in Sao Paulo in the 1970s and managed to clean up quite a bit of that problem. It's hidden a bit because now there's new urban environmental pollution in Sao Paulo, but it tends to come more from cars rather than from smokestacks. And so Brazil, as I say, usually has those that good side and that bad side of much of its environmental politics.
There seems to be a tension between, on the one hand, retaining control over its own resources and land, and on the other hand, working with the rest of the world. What are some of the ways that this tension is being worked out in Brazil in relation to the rest of the world?
Well, one of the places where you see that really clearly is on the issue of deforestation, because one of the issues that, or one of the points that Brazil has consistently made in global environmental negotiations is that natural resources belong to countries. And so if the resources are on your territory, they are yours as a country to do with them what you will. And in Brazil's case, that means that they're really part of a national development project that Brazilians are very committed to. But on the other hand, Brazil is often willing to work with other countries to deal with some of these environmental issues, sometimes because there might be funding available through the international system, or sometimes there might be new sources of technology that might come from the international system. And increasingly, Brazil is willing to work with other countries to try to develop broader kinds of solutions as well. I mean, the most recent climate change negotiations, for example, it was pretty instrumental in starting to think about helping the countries of the world start to think about how you might account for climate change that comes from deforestation, which it hasn't been willing to do in the past.
The point is well taken that every country controls its own natural resources, or should. At the same time, well, could you talk about the way the rainforest is being developed and who is profiting from it? I mean, is it Brazil or is it international corporations? What's happening in this kind of development?
Well, it depends. The Amazon is very big. That's the first thing that needs to be a part of this discussion, because Brazil is the size of the continental United States and the Amazon is half of Brazil. And so I usually tell people to think about the Brazilian Amazon as though the United States had a massive forest that stretched from the Mississippi westward or eastward, your choice. But it's a very, very large forest. And in part for that reason, it has many different smaller ecosystems within it. And the pressures on the Amazon are rather different from place to place, so that the highest rates of deforestation right now, actually, are from the expansion of soybean cultivation in Mato Grosso do Sul, which is not actually what most people think of the Amazon. It's a more transitional kind of region that is less the kind of classic forest than it is sort of smaller scrub, but still part of the Amazon drainage system, and so still related to that. And so there, a major pressure is, as I say, the expansion of soybean cultivation, and that is soybean cultivation done on large farms, very large farms, largely for export. Brazil is one of the largest exporters of soybeans in the United States, second only to the United States, and much of that comes to northern countries for animal feed. And so that's just one example of the way that larger production and exchange and trade is connected to what's going on in Brazil. But there's a kind of interesting twist to this, because one of the other things about Brazilian soybeans, remember I said there's always a good story and a bad story, if you will, if you're worried about environmental protection. Brazil has more conventional soybeans as opposed to genetically modified soybeans under cultivation than any of the other large soybean producers, which are the United States and Argentina. And so a lot of that soybean production, ironically, actually is this conventional non-genetically modified soybean that is being demanded by European consumers who don't want to eat the genetically modified kind. And so there are currently some agreements with the Europeans that there won't be deforestation for their soybeans, and yet the consumer demand is there for the Brazilian soybeans, and that is one of the reasons then for deforestation in that part. And that's where almost half of the deforestation has been happening in the Amazon in the last couple of years.
And that's where almost half of the deforestation has been happening. What else besides soybeans is happening in these deforest areas?
Well, other than that, you have a lot of different sources going on at once. Some of it is for timber, and there you have all kinds of issues about the very large percent of Amazonian timber, which is actually harvested illegally and taken out. You also have a lot of land clearing for small agriculture, although most deforestation at this point is not so much small scale as it is some of these large-scale enterprises. But it can add up, because if you have fairly small amounts of deforestation in a number of places, that can add up to as much as a large farm. But I don't want to leave us with the impression that Brazilians aren't managing to do some new things with deforestation, because one of the reasons that they were willing to talk about deforestation at this most recent climate change conference is that the last couple of years in Brazil have actually seen some of the most significant drops in deforestation that Brazil has ever seen. And even more interesting than that, there have been drops in deforestation even while the economy as a whole has been growing in leaps and bounds over the last couple of years, 5 to 6%. And so it's one of these rare instances where usually when economic growth is good, deforestation is bad. But except for a small blip in 2007, the rate of deforestation since 2004 has been going down while the economy has been growing. And that, I would say, is probably largely due, although I haven't been able to get back to Brazil to do some more recent research on this, that's probably largely due to the fact that Brazil has some pretty new satellite technology it's using that allows it for the first time to really see where deforestation is happening. And the Brazilian government has a website where you can go and you can put in your municipality or you can put in your region of the Amazon, or anyone can do this. There's an English language version of it. And you can actually see satellite images of deforestation that's been happening in particular regions or the whole part of the Amazon over the last year, the last month, the last 2 years. And what it has meant is that for the first time, there's a lot more information and thus accountability on who's deforesting and how much.
The fact that the rate of deforestation has gone down is good news in some ways, but there's still untold acres per day that are being destroyed, that are being deforested. It's not that it's stopped or that we're reforesting certain areas in any way.
That's right. And, partly because the scale of this is so big, you can usually say in any given year that, you know, an area the size of Belgium was destroyed, or an area the size of, you know, you can. There are whole countries worth of deforestation that's happening a year by year. So it's not that I'm trying to minimize it, but it is just rather striking that this is the first time that there has been this drop in the rate of deforestation, even as the total numbers are very large. And the talk that I'm doing tomorrow is actually about this whole set. It's mostly about Brazil, but it's also about this whole set of really large developing countries, the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And one of the things that you see repeatedly with these countries is that their size really complicates their weight in the world, because they are so big that, and I'm talking population, a growing economy, often territory, these are some of the biggest countries of the world, anything that they do looks really exaggerated because the countries are so large.
What is the nature of the communication and cooperation, or lack of cooperation, among South American countries on issues of the environment?
Well, I just wrote a paper that tried to look at that issue, and one of the conclusions that I made in it was that the South American countries rarely take up environmental issues together directly, that almost always when environmental issues come up, they're sort of incidental to other things that they might be working on. And one of the examples of that is that the South American countries have recently formed a Union of South American Nations. It's the first time that all of the countries on the continent have gotten together regularly to talk about politics. And one of their conclusions was that they really needed to build infrastructure that cut through the region. The way South America is organized right now is that almost everybody in South America lives along the coasts. And it's a very big continent that's about 5,000 miles across at its widest, and yet everyone's within 100 or 200 miles of the coast. And the historic pattern is countries get their natural resources to the coast, and then they ship them out in international trade. But there's been very little kind of interaction through the middle of the continent. And there's now this major initiative to try to build infrastructure through the middle of the continent. And just to give you one example of the kind of thing that's being done, a bridge across the river between Brazil and Peru, and now a road that's being built on out of the Brazilian and Peruvian Amazon to the Pacific. Now, what that road will do will allow all sorts of Brazilian Amazonian resources to be moved much more quickly out to the Pacific and potentially out for export than through the longer route out east to the Atlantic. Now, this is a project that is trying to consider environmental impacts of these projects, but the purpose of them is something else. This is not an environmental initiative. It has all sorts of environmental implications, but the purpose of it is to increase trade. And given where something like this bridge is, the kind of trade that will be done is trade in natural resources. And so it's likely to have further impact on the Amazon forest.
So basically something like that could make it a whole lot easier to ship out, for example, rare woods or soybeans or any kinds of agricultural products, which means that it could have a terribly detrimental environmental effect if nothing were done to control that.
That's right. And in fact, that's in many ways exactly the reason why it was done. The trade reason to try to increase exports is also one that, since the exports are largely in natural resources, is one that will destroy the environment.
We're talking to Professor Catherine Hochstedler, who will be here in Santa Fe tomorrow, January 23rd. Let's go back for a moment to the question of genetically modified agricultural products. How is it that Brazil ended up with so much non-genetically modified food?
Well, this is one of these cases where I think it really goes back to politics, because Brazil has some unusual characteristics, one of which is it has, especially unusual for Latin America, Brazil has a very strong public ministry, and we don't really have an equivalent of that term in the United States, but it basically is a public attorney that has the ability to sue almost anyone for almost any reason, including the government. And the combination of this public ministry, the Ministério Público, and a very strong environmental movement have meant that Brazilian environmentalists have quite a bit of capacity to actually stop projects of various kinds. And so in this case, Brazilian environmentalists were seated on the commission that was supposed to approve genetically modified organisms, but when the committee was about to approve them, they took it to court through the Ministério Público. And so they were able, through a series of court decisions, to block the introduction, the legal introduction of genetically modified organisms from 1997 when it first came up all the way until 2005, and that really is very unusual. And I think many Americans are actually familiar with this kind of phenomenon. We have quite a strong role of the judiciary in our environmental politics. So we have a lot of politics that's done in the courts. You know, the Endangered Species Act has been largely enforced in the courts with different actors like environmental organizations bringing cases. What I think we don't always appreciate is that that's pretty unusual. And so the fact that Brazil is doing it too is even more unusual. There isn't another Latin American country that has this kind of really strong role of the judiciary in environmental politics. And that combination of a strong judiciary and a strong environmental movement just blocked that up for quite a number of years.
Now, in Brazil, you have, as in many Latin American countries, and indeed many countries around the world, debt that gives way to loans and then structural adjustment programs that are part of the kind of neoliberal, so-called neoliberal way of doing things. And part of what happens under those circumstances is that state regulations become weaker, state expenditures for things like environmental protection become weaker. How do structural adjustment programs actually affect Brazil and the environment there?
Well, they had a pretty strong impact in the early 1990s when some of those structural adjustment programs were being implemented, and especially Brazil had very high rates of inflation. And when it finally adopted some of these neoliberal policies, the target for them was to bring down rates of inflation that were as much as 85% a month and fueled by quite high government expenditures. And so through the 1990s, as Brazil dealt with inflation and dealt with the privatization of some parts of their economy, you really did see this kind of impact where there was less money for governments. The regulation cuts didn't happen quite so much, in part because of this role of the court system that I was just talking about. So because the regulations existed on the books and because people were willing to try to get them enforced in the courts, Brazil was less able to roll back some of those regulations than in some of its neighbors. Ironically, one of the things that has been more important, I think, in the 2000s, and this is a fairly recent development, is that at this point, actually, actors like the International Monetary Fund don't have a lot of direct influence on Brazil. Back in 2004, Brazil actually paid back its last loan to the International Monetary Fund early. And since then, and the other thing that it did was it also made a real point as it rolled over its debt after 1999 of trying to sell its new debt in its own currency rather than in dollars. And both of these are things that give the international financial system much less control over the Brazilian economy than was true in the 1990s and than is true in many of its neighbors even now. But ironically, what's been happening since then is that Brazil has had quite this economic growth boom, and much of that boom is now spent, now originates in government spending again. And so in the last couple of years, the Brazilian government has begun to spend quite large sums of money on big development projects, which the IMF would never have signed off on in the 1990s. And it's actually those projects that Brazilian environmentalists are now identifying as one of the most serious threats to environmental protection. Various Brazilian projects that support the building of roads in the Amazon again. And so it's rather interesting that both the 1990s structural adjustment projects and also the post-structural adjustment projects, when the government is spending again, have had different kinds of negative implications for the environment.
So how powerful is the environmental movement within Brazil compared to other forces in Brazilian politics?
Well, it's interesting that you phrase it that way, because when you say to me, compared to other forces in Brazilian politics, then I give a different answer than if you had said, compared to environmental movements elsewhere. Because compared to environmental movements elsewhere, in Latin America, in other parts of the developing world, the Brazilian environmental movement is really very strong. There are thousands of organizations. Some of them have quite large budgets. They've been around for a long time in many cases. And they really have a lot of power compared to their counterparts in other countries. But again, here's, I think, where you get one of these, you know, it's a big country and everything's big. And you also have extremely powerful forces for environmental degradation, very powerful economic actors, for example. And one of the things that you find is that the Brazilian government is actually really quite divided, so that you have a pretty strong Ministry of Environment, which is constantly butting heads with a very strong Ministry of Mines and Energy, for example, or Ministry of Agriculture. And so what you have in Brazil is you have opposite forces, both very strong. And in many cases, then, environmental actors are not the strongest.
One of the main differences between environmental politics and virtually all other issues is that in the long run, if the environmentalists lose, then everyone loses. We don't have air to breathe. We don't have water to drink. We have climate change that washes away all the coastal cities. Whereas in, you know, banking and development and healthcare and military and so on, there's always winners and losers. Has that begun to dawn on any significant numbers of people that you've seen in your work and your research?
Well, when you do surveys of Brazilians, and I haven't done them myself, but I've seen a series of surveys done since the early 1990s. When you do surveys of Brazilians, their level of environmental concern is actually pretty similar to that of the developed countries. It's not different from the U.S. or Europe. And so there are pretty high levels of environmental concern and even a stated willingness to pay more to protect the environment. But it's not the top of people's agenda. The top of people's agenda would tend to be issues like unemployment, economic problems, security problems. Public security is a very big issue in Brazil right now. And so while people say that it's important when you ask them, it's not as important as many of the other things that people are more concerned about. There is more concern in the business community in Brazil with environmental issues than you see in most other Latin American countries, so that you have rather large numbers of Brazilian businesses that are aware that at least part of that countries look at Brazil and think about its environmental problems. And so especially the companies that work internationally are quite cognizant of the fact that they have to be aware of Brazil's environmental image in the selling of their products. And in fact, interestingly, one of the very first actors to insist that Brazil had to take a stance in favor of doing something concrete at the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference was actually a group of some of Brazil's largest business representatives who said, you know, we really need to, as a country, take a stance on this. In the end, Brazil did make a commitment about cutting the rate of increase in its emissions. And by the way, that law already passed. It passed between Copenhagen and the New Year. So it was a very quickly passing law. And as I say, some of it was just because of this group of business people who insisted that Brazil really did have to take some kind of stance on this because they're worried about environmental protectionism if they don't do something like that.
Catherine Hochstedler is a professor at the Balsillie School of International Affairs at the University of Waterloo, Canada. She is co-author of the book Greening Brazil, Environmental Activism in State and Society. And once again, she'll be speaking tomorrow, Saturday, January 23rd at 3 o'clock, a lecture titled Brazil, the Latin American Giant. That's at Santa Fe Prep School, sponsored by the Santa Fe Council on International Relations. For more information, you can go to santafecouncil.org or call 505-982-4931. And by the way, students with ID get to go in free. Catherine, thank you so much for being with us. I'd like now to welcome Linda Siegel with today's legislative update. Welcome, Linda.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
So, the legislative session just got underway. What's new?
Well, of course, this is the beginning of our 30-day session. The governor did a speech on the opening day, as he always did, and it was a speech that wasn't quite as bombastic as some of his speeches in the past, because we have some big problems. As we talked about on our show at the beginning of the week, we have budget issues. There's about a $650 million deficit, and we don't really have any way to pay it.
Now, there's, of course, lots of ways to bring in new revenue, so it's always a question of revenue and cuts. We'll be seeing the various things, the various ideas that are put forward. Any sense of the mood, taxes versus spending cuts?
Well, it's interesting because there's definitely a division between the House and the Senate. The House, who actually are up for re-election this year, seems much more willing to look at how we can protect all of our services and on our protect our public schools, protect higher education, Medicaid. So they're talking about and working on some tax increases. And of course, we're hearing from the more conservative members in the Senate that we're not going to pass any taxes.
The Council of Bishops have come out against any form of domestic partnership. What's up with that? I thought they were getting on board.
Well, we thought that if provided a bill that they indicated that they would like, which made no reference to marriage, that we would have them on board. But apparently that's not the case. But domestic partner legislation will be introduced. The governor has put it on the call. He's very committed to it. So we'll be seeing domestic partnership next week.
If I may ask, what do bishops who have chosen a lifelong path of real or imagined celibacy have to even say about domestic partnership?
Well, you'd have to ask them. But we're, of course, really saddened and even upset that that the bishops don't care about the civil rights and equal rights and fairness for people who are gay and lesbian.
Linda Siegel, anything else before we go?
Well, I wanted to tell you about the Working Families Group, which is a group of legislators from both the House and the Senate, Democrats only, and they're putting out their own tax increase proposals, which include things like a surcharge on incomes over $150,000, tobacco tax, the corporate income tax combined reporting, because as we know in New Mexico, people like Walmart, Home Depot don't pay any corporate income tax. So they're going to be pushing in both of their chambers for fairness and equity in the tax structure. So look forward to that in the coming weeks.
Linda Siegel is with us during the session every Friday, except for the coming Friday, during the course of the legislative session. So Friday will be the legislative update. Thank you so much, Linda, and we'll see you very soon.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to take a break. Robert Knott is on deck. We'll be right back. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasa Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He's the education beat reporter, and he is with us every Friday, except for this coming Friday, speaking of the arts. Welcome.
You mean a week from today?
A week from today.
That's right, no show. And this is not a Christmas song, so. Do 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 do. What a weather outside is frightful. Mary Charlotte's so.
You did this one last time.
I don't care, it's snowing, and I love it. I love the snow. I have the day off in my
horoscope
today.
Why don't you sing Walking in a Winter Wonderland or something? That's not Christmas either, is it?
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the lane, I'm glistening. Oh, you're right, that is. Any song that's about winter but not about Christmas should be sung.
I suppose sleigh bells are kind of
Christmas-y. Even Jingle Bells is not Christmas. It's just about a sleigh ride through the winter.
Right.
But people get mad. Like, you sing these songs at work February 3rd, and they're like, what are you doing singing a Christmas song? And you're like, this is a winter song, and they throw things at you. So my horoscope today says
what do they throw at you?
They usually throw compliments my way and winks and flirtations and stuff.
No, oh, that's
the usual. Airplanes.
The usual. Okay, so what's happening this weekend and this coming week?
Well, first I guess I would urge everybody to consider the weather. And if there's an event tonight that's listed in our calendar or elsewhere, or you've heard about it, you're probably going to want to call in advance to make sure these things are occurring. Because the storm, according to everything I'm hearing, will continue through roughly midday tomorrow, so you already know the deal. Drive carefully, use four-wheel drive, keep your lights on, and but make sure these things are occurring, because maybe they ain't. For example, Angelo Jaramillo, playwright, actor, activist, former critic, he's got a series of one-act plays that Teatro Paraguas is presenting tonight at their studio on Richards Lane. It's called Shortes. Do you know anything about it?
Not really.
Well,
I did get a notice about it, but...
Well, so he's doing The Dishwasher of the Divided Heart, and La Servienta. 7:30 tonight it opens at the Teatro Paraguas studio on Richards Lane, Suite B. You got to pay to get in, but it ain't too expensive. I'm going to give you a phone number, 424-1601. Again, call to confirm it's occurring. And you should do the same thing if you're thinking of going to see the El Dorado team players. Do the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, big Broadway musical comedy, lots of fun. Open 7:30 tonight, 466-4656. That's at the James A. Little Theater, New Mexico School for the Deaf. Both these shows continue through the weekend. You can check the Paso Tiempo listings for the information. But again, call if you're going to some event tonight. Call to make sure it's happening.
Hey, and in a completely random direction, because this isn't theater, but Monday night at 5:30 there will be a reading and signing of Matthew Baca's new novel, The Antiquarian, and that will be held at the McCune Charitable Foundation on East Alameda in Santa Fe, and book sale proceeds benefit the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, and there's hors d'oeuvres.
Oh boy, I hope there's appetizers too. Speaking of book talks, Michael Brill won an award, New Mexico Book Award, for the numerology for healing. 4 o'clock on Saturday, he'll be talking about that book and signing copies at the Ark on Romero Street. It's free, pop on in. We put a little blurb about it in the subtext in our book review section today. We do have several book reviews in the Paso Tiempo Day, CD reviews. And our cover story is about The Red Shoes. Do you know the movie from 1948?
I never saw that movie.
Well, it's about a woman.
Is that the same as The Ruby Slippers?
No, the Ruby Slippers helped, like, you fight witches and stuff, and they also, like, you tap your feet and you end up back in your own bed, and it's black and white, whereas you were in a color world when you wore them. But, no, the red shoes are a little more menacing in a strange way, because you put them on and then you can't stop dancing.
Oh.
And Michael Powell, Emmerich Pressburger, who were an incredible team, put together this beautiful picture in 1948. Featuring dancer Maura Shearer, who passed away last year. Jonathan Richards did a really nice piece on it in today's Paso Tiempo. Great imagery, great color, great photos, great story. And The Red Shoes opens at the Screen on the College of Santa Fe campus.
Yay, so
head
the
on
Screen.
Over. Yay, the Screen. Meanwhile, CCA, Cinematheque, is continuing to run A Single Man. I'm going to see it this Sunday.
I saw that. I saw that on the opening night.
Everybody seems to say it's a terrific movie.
I think
Colin
it's terrific.
Firth is at his best.
And CCA Cinematheque director Jason Silverman is walking by as we speak. And and I'm very glad the Cinematheque has stayed open.
Correct.
And this A Single Man is a terrific movie. I mean, it's a profound movie thematically. It's about grief and death and things like that. But if you want to go just to see the hairstyles, it's worth it just for that.
And there you have
1963.
And that'll be running for at least a couple of weeks. I understand CCA is at 1050 Old Santa Fe Trail, 982-1338 is the phone number, I think.
And 982-1338. And Colin Firth was on The Daily Show the other day talking about the movie.
I bet he was.
He is terrific. Hey, I got a notice saying that we should mention that five of the feature films in the Paso Tiempo today were shot in New Mexico. Brothers, The Spy Next Door, Did You Hear About the Morgans, The Book of Eli, and opening today, Legion.
It's too bad that so many of them are not good.
Well,
I know, I give them a lot of hard time, but a lot of people make these jokes. For every No Country for Old Men, and this is nobody's fault, and it's not New Mexico's fault.
It's not New Mexico's fault. We provide the scenery, not the script.
That is true. Book of Eli was shot down in Carrizozo. Did You Hear About the Morgans? Was shot up in northern New Mexico. I did a piece on that. Brothers was shot here, and that's true. A lot of movies shot here. I think we've got the new Coen Brothers movie coming in. I think they're bringing the remake of True Grit here. So movies here in New Mexico.
Lots of movies.
I shouldn't have said that, but honestly, it seems like we have a track record of like 4 out of every 5 are just not good movies.
Hey, speaking of not movies, welcome to Bohemia.
Welcome to Bohemia.
Tuesday night of next week, January 26th at Cafe Paris at 7 o'clock, a blend of European-flavored music with a few cabaret originals and a few classic Romanofsky and Phillips tunes, Ron Romanofsky on accordion. And it's a quartet. Looks like violin, stand-up bass, and drum kit.
Excellent. I like that stuff. In a snow day like this, you want to go hear a violin and have a hot chocolate, maybe.
I know I do.
If you happen to go over to the Kakawa Chocolate House on Paseo de Peralta, they're having an opening Saturday for Textile Shadow Boxes by Ellen Scott. Reception 6 to 8 p.m. The show runs through February 10th. That's tomorrow night. Might be a good night to go over there and have a shot of hot chocolate. Now, let's say you're into a, you want a lecture about some history going on around this joint. So it's Monday night. You don't have anything to do. You're depressed. You're unemployed. The TV's not working. Southwest Seminars is going to have an Ancient Sites and Ancient Stories lecture series presentation of what happened in Mimbres and where did Casas Grandes come from. University of Colorado archaeologist Stephen Lexon will be speaking about this at 6 o'clock at the Hotel Santa Fe. You got to pay to get in. Benefits proceed. Proceeds benefit the Museum of New Mexico Office of Archaeological Studies. 6 o'clock, Monday night, call 466-2775.
And?
Yes.
Let's see. Painted Physics, new work by Orlando Leibovitz.
That's right.
Art and Science Come Together, reception tomorrow from 1 to 4 at Linda Durham Gallery. And that's it. Let's see. Linda Durham Contemporary Art, 1807 2nd Street.
He's a great guy. He's a good artist. I see him all the time. He's a nice guy. He has a couple of dogs.
Well, there we have it. If he's got dogs, it can't be all bad.
Mozart, this guy that was around a long time ago, he used to play music. He's got a birthday coming up, even though he's dead. The Santa Fe Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra performs in celebration of Mozart with pianist Conrad Tau at 7:30 p.m. Thursday at the Lenzic, 988-1234. See the previous story in today's Pasa Tiempo. And I think the Santa Fe Pro Musica is also going to be doing some stuff on that other guy, Beethoven, later next weekend. We'll take a look. Remember, no show next weekend, so don't send us information and say announce this because we won't be here.
We have to, the next show is going to be Friday, February 5th, the next weekend of the arts.
Okay, that's good. I can sleep in tomorrow. Barbara Harrelson wrote a book on literary walks around Santa Fe.
Yes.
She's going to be doing a talk on Thursday night on turning the pages of Santa Fe stories past and present. 7 o'clock, Santuario de Guadalupe at 100 South Guadalupe Street, 989-4561. It's free, 7 o'clock Thursday.
And we'll be talking to her oh so briefly on Tuesday.
Oh, wonderful. Before her Thursday event.
Yep.
That's how it should be.
And then there's a screening of the film Colors of the Holocaust by Finnish filmmaker Rax Rinnekangas. I'm not sure how you say that. Coinciding with the 65th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. And the film is being shown around the world on that day, free of charge to all audiences. And that's Wednesday the 27th, next week, at 2:30 and 5:30, with a discussion and musical interlude in between at the John Cocteau Theater on Montezuma Street in Santa Fe. For more information, 992-1905. And you can also go to the website Hamakom, the place, H-A-M-A-K-O-M, the place, .org.
Cool. Speaking of Pro Musica, by the way, they're looking for ushers, concession assistants. Give them a call. And if you're an actor, a stage actor, I'll tip you off to some auditions 2 weeks from now for Dead Man's Cell Phone over at Santa Fe Playhouse. It's going to be 1 o'clock on February 6th, cold readings. Show runs in April. If you're interested, it's by Sarah Rule. And the New Mexico Gay Straight Alliance Network is looking for everybody, lesbian, gay, bi, trans, whatever works for you, and straight teen girls, that's interesting, for the production of monologues for I Am an Emotional Creature. So no acting experience needed. There's a phone number in the Pasa Tiempo for an audition, 310-699-9951. If people go to these auditions and people treat you terribly, call me up. I'd like to hear about that. I'll tell them.
Has that happened?
No, nobody. That never happens. People are nice. I just wonder.
Why did you say that?
It just occurred to me. Like, you know, do people show up and they're like, mop the floor? I don't want you to audition. I need this, you know, hang those clothes up in the corner. Do you think that stuff occurs? You know, this is strange. People get in my Jeep. I have a 1995 Jeep Wrangler. And a day like today, and they're sitting there talking with me for like 2 minutes, and all of a sudden they're like, it's snowing in your Jeep. Because what happened was this. Last year, the top came off my Jeep on Old Pecos Trail. So I went topless for a while, and then I got a bikini top, which are only like $80. Because I don't have the money for a new top.
What are you talking about? I'm trying to announce some arts events.
I know, but the point is that I still have the bikini top on, so if you're driving the Jeep with me, it snows.
So, energy efficiency and literacy class tomorrow, January 23rd, from 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon at the Elder Grace Common House at 3466 Cerrillos Road, next to the Holiday Inn Express. And Catherine Mortimer, Duncan Sills, and Claudia Pavel will be speaking. And for more information, you can call the Housing Trust at 989-3960.
Bill Hearn, one of my favorite Santa Fe performers, 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night at La Fiesta Lounge at La Fonda, 6:30 on Sunday at the Santa Fe Brewing Company, Wednesday and Thursday back at La Fonda. Great country western stuff. Go see Bill Hearn. Most of those events are free.
Most excellent.
Tonight at La Casa Senna is the Best of Broadway if you want to stand on a snowy night and hear them sing songs from some Broadway show. 6 o'clock, no cover. Meanwhile, at Pranzo, Faith Page is singing, piano and vocals, 6 o'clock, small cover charge tonight. And also at Tiny's, the Jakes are doing some classic rock at 8:30, no cover. So there's music events galore. Tin Star has Don Curry teaming up with Andy Prim and Pete Springer at 9:30, small cover charge.
And the Dragonfly School's open house is tomorrow from 10 to noon.
And they were supposed to get me a press release to that. You just reminded me. We met that lady here before.
Yeah, Nancy Woodward. She's
supposed to tip
me
off about it.
She's the director of the school. She's terrific.
Nancy, come on. I got the day off today.
And, well, so this is tomorrow from 10 to noon. You can visit staff, families, board of directors, and view the facility and hands-on activity for children and healthy snacks.
It sounds great. I'm sorry I didn't know in advance.
And that's at 935 Alto Street. For more information, 995-9869.
If you want to know more about the Cultural Revolution in post-1850 New Mexico, Robert Hemerick E. Valencia.
Cultural evolution or revolution?
Well, I think it's evolution.
Okay.
He's going to be speaking about kivas, moradas, churches, and padrinos at 2 o'clock Thursday at the St. John's Methodist Church, which is a nice church, 1200 Old Pecos Trail. Got to pay to get in. 982-9274. That's on Thursday. Say, what time is it?
8:53.
Man. You want to learn about international folk dancing? You can take a lesson at 7 o'clock Tuesday and then dance at 8 o'clock at Odd Fellows Hall. 1125 Sirius Road, 473-0955. And on over there. Wednesday night, John Hammond's down at the Santa Fe Brewing Company, 7:30. 988-1234. You got to pay to get in.
Hey, and did you notice that on Tuesday, January 26th, three sisters that comprise the Albers Trio and pianist Yoel Eumson, did you say that already?
No, go right ahead. I'm glad.
Silver medalist at the Van Cliburn International Piano Competition will be playing Beethoven's String Trio in D major and all sorts of other good things. Let's see, Franck and Sons, List, various other people, Dvorak. And it's at St. Francis Auditorium at the New Mexico Museum of Art.
And we have a story on that in Paso Tempo today.
Excellent.
Over at Verve tonight, photos by Stanko Abadzik, Julio Bittencourt, and Michael Crosser, reception 5 to 7 p.m. See Paul Weideman's story in Paso Tempo. George O'Keefe is opening Susan Rothenberg, Moving in Place. Exhibit of her paintings through May 16th. No reception, though. And Blue Chip Contemporary at 112 West San Francisco Street is having an opening tonight for Charles Herbstreit. Abstract recycled work. Reception 5 o'clock. Show runs through mid-February.
And almost last but not least, Michael Combs will be playing his old-timey ranchera, honky-tonk, blues, union songs, originals, and all kinds of things on fiddle, button accordion, banjo, guitar, and auto harp on Sunday, the 31st of January, from 6 to 9 at Upper Crust Pizza.
There's a lot of stuff to do this weekend. I'm just going to
urge you again. That's next weekend.
Oh, well, we're off a week.
But we're not here in a week, so.
And I'm just urging everybody again to, especially for tonight, call in advance. Make sure these events are happening, particularly with the theater shows. And just be as careful as you can. I had an occasion to ride up Hyde Park Road before I came over here, and I saw an SUV totally skid out.
No.
And thank goodness no one was around. And the Chevy truck behind him stopped and put his blinker lights on, and everybody waited for this person to get out of a snowbank, and
yeah.
It was okay. But obviously, if that's happening at 8:30, you know, watch yourself at 12:30 because it's supposed to snow through midday tomorrow. My horoscope in the New Mexican, not Heather Roundtree's, but the one in the regular, says that I should take the day off from work, which I am. But the strange thing is it says I have to balance my checkbook tonight. And I'm supposed to go to a party at this guy's house in El Dorado, and I like him. And I'm wondering, why do I have to balance my checkbook before I go there?
Well, why do you read what the astrology tells you? Hey, I want to say one more thing, that there's a veterans art project.
Oh, that's a good thing. Go ahead.
It's a free creative arts workshop for veterans. And it's tomorrow, Saturday, from 10 to 4:30 at Ghost Ranch on 401 Old Taos Highway. That is here, right here in Santa Fe.
Yeah, right off Paseo de Peralta.
For more information, you can see vetartproject.com. There's also things happening for service members, veterans, and family members on Sunday from 1 to 5:30, and community building, storytelling, movement, improvisation, all sorts of good things. So you should register in advance. You can also go to you can send an email to vetartproject@gmail.com.
I'm really glad
Looks like some
that.
Good work, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a vet, and I should have mentioned that myself, so good.
Yep.
So that's it. Great weekend. Be careful. Snow, snow, snow.
Snow it is. We've got a minute and a half.
Well, let's flirt.
Okay, wait a minute. I want to give the number for that veterans. It's area code 414, even though it's local, but it's area code 414-698-9571.
Mm-hmm. 9571.
Okay. Now lay it on me. Go ahead. Flirt.
Well, I'm just going to miss you next week. I feel bad when you're not there, especially Aww. When I show up and there's nobody set up here.
Aww.
And then, on the other hand, I can sleep in. Today would have been a good day to sleep in.
No kidding.
I know. But not together.
That would have been nice. It's snowy and rainy. I woke up really early this morning. Wake up early. I didn't even know. It was before the dawn, and I just went and sat by the window and looked out at the rain turning to snow and the darkness turning to kind of twilight.
I know. I love this stuff. Of course, my
How do you know? You weren't there.
I woke up myself about 5:45 and did almost all the same thing in my own place.
Really? In a parallel way? Wow, we were doing that together
apart.
We
were, but apart.
Together yet apart.
Make that clear. There's all these rumors about a still from you sitting on my lap at that film festival party.
What?
You know the deal.
Is somebody on the line?
No, it's you or there.
I'm hearing the music, which means it's time to go. I call that Saved by the Bell. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm Mary Charlotte. This is Robert Knott. Speaking of the arts, we're streaming. Everybody knows this already. Why do I keep saying it? We're streaming at KSFR.org. My email is radiocafe@KSFR.org. And the podcast site where you can hear the show, including this show, any time of day or night, is SantaFeRadioCafe.org. And I've tried to arrange it now so that people can leave comments. I'm not sure if it's working. If somebody tries to leave a comment and doesn't succeed, send me an email at radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz a la carta.
That's correct. Please be careful out there.
Yeah, be careful out there. We've got a minute left.
Oh, see? Now let's get back to the story. So anyway, there I was. Undressed in the glass, and she said to me, well, I never, and I said, well, I know you have, and after all, you and your sister are both beautiful. Fortunately, they were both 18, which is great, because at 36, they're closer to my age. So I said, hey, I can't tell that story here, can I?
Well, if you add them together, they are 36.
Well, that's right, and that's just talking about the chest. You should have seen the rest of the dimensions. Anyway, so I want you to have a great
And
new
if you
year.
Add their IQs, they're a genius.
Now, why do you have to go and put intellectual into it? Why don't you get intellectualizing?
Okay.
Fun to see you. I hope
nice
you have a good
you
week
too.
Off.
Have a wonderful,
and I will be, back in
snowy,
February.
Snowy, happy weekend. And drive carefully above all, everybody, and stay happy and healthy. And we'll see you soon.
Do the chow.
Chow.
Oh.